This is Radio Influence.
Introducing the world's heavyweight champion, the Crusher!
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
And welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. I am Jeff Crushell, and we are your weekly source for performance information. The Con Man is here, keeping us on track. And if you want to get in touch with us, please do so. CrushPerformance.com is the website. You can follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush. And if you're on Facebook, join our group called The Talent Grid. Go there, apply, we'll let you in. We're just hooking everybody up with the world of performance and all the great information out there. Well, we're kicking 2017 off with a bang. We started the year off with a conversation with the coach of champions, Jim Fannin, looking at the mindset and mental game when it comes to top performance and some of the strategies you can use to get yourself set up for a championship 2017. And last week, another powerful show as we kicked off the Crush 2017 War on Sugar campaign with Crush favorite Dr. Anduise Allen. This was a no-holds-barred, knock-em-down, drag-em-out, no-BS version of what's going on in the world of nutrition in terms of our general health and also performance. It is exactly what the Crush War on Sugar is all about, raising awareness, providing some facts, and pointing to some solutions at the same time. So if you want to catch up on either of those shows or share them with your friends, go to our website, crushperformance.com, and you can find the links to the podcast there. Also, we always say if you have any questions or comments, let us know. And it's true. If you have any topics you'd like us to look into or investigate, or if you have any questions you want us to answer, let us know. We may dedicate a segment or, heck, an entire show to your topic if we like it enough. We will dig and find the answers for you. That much I guarantee. If we don't know the answers, I could tell you this, we know somebody who does. So let us know. You can get to us on our website, through Twitter, on Facebook, or any number of ways for sure. Today, we kick off another Crush hot topic for 2017, which is coaching and coaching development. One of the most powerful positions in all of sport is the position of the coach. And it doesn't matter whether we're looking at the grassroots entry level of sport or whether we're looking at the most elite high-performance professional positions in sport, there is nothing more influential or powerful to daily and long-term performance than a coach. Every single one of us can sit back right now, think back to our sporting career right from when it started, and you could probably remember very clearly, if not every single coach you've ever had, certainly those one or two special coaches that influenced you, encouraged you, or steered you in the right direction in terms of your performance. Unfortunately, we probably also remember very clearly those coaches that weren't so good. But we're not here to focus on the bad side of anything. We never are. You guys know that for sure. But what we do want to approach is how important a coach is, and we're going to spend an episode a month this year looking at coaching and coaching development. We are going to scour the landscape and go around the globe looking at great programs, talking to great coaches, and some of the science and literature and research that is reflecting what a great coach is all about. And there's plenty of it out there. And in my time in sport, professional sport, amateur sport, collegiate sport, I have been lucky enough to be around some of the great coaches and some of the not so great coaches. We learn from them all, no question about it. But there are tricks to the trade. And if we look at what's going on in the world of performance right now, you will see a massive push towards coaching development from the grassroots right up to the highest levels of sport. So when we look at developmental models, I think there's five priorities that need to really be addressed. And of course, the number one goal is player development. And it doesn't matter whether we're talking about elite performance or just allowing kids to have fun and success at whatever level of sport they're at. But in the end, the priority for any program should be player development. Inside of player development, of course, there's a deep hierarchy of priorities. If we talk about the athlete and then all the components of becoming an athlete and then all the components of becoming a complete player, well, the coach directs all of that. So if we look at the priorities for program development, player development and the player process, the player development process is king for sure. Second, I would say coaching, and the coaching development program has to be there because you need good coaches at every single level of development. And then you need leadership and, of course, the organization. You need the facilities. And at the end of the day, you do need competition. But here's where we need to start really thinking about the process of development. Canada has a very brilliant program called the Long-Term Athlete Development Program. And it is one of the most brilliant programs I've seen around the world when it comes to recreational development of just an athlete from a holistic standpoint. It tracks the development of an athlete right from entry level into sport, right on to, you know, an adult athlete playing recreationally just for fun. Now, the idea of the long-term athlete development program is not to produce high performance athletes, though I will say this, the process does produce more high performance athletes because of its organization and its priorities. But the goal is to allow young athletes and young players to have success at every single level of sport so they stay in sport. Listen, if we look at the research out there right now, we know for a fact that the dropout rate in organized sport is the highest it's ever been. It's coming in right around 70% of athletes are dropping out around the age of 13 and 14, and that's the highest we've ever seen in sport. Why? Well, there's a number of reasons why. Let's get to it after the break. We'll be joined by Wayne Perro, the senior coaching consultant and advisor for the Coaching Association of Canada. We'll talk about why athletes are dropping out, what coaches need to do and be aware of to help avoid this. And we'll also look at Canada's program for not just developing athletes, but their parallel program for developing coaches. It's absolutely brilliant. And later in the show, I want to go back to a conversation we had with Dan Pink about his take on motivation and why we're so off on how we're motivating the people around us. So stick around as we kick off the Crush Focus on Coaching and Coaching Development right after this on Crush Performance. Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Kershaw, the con man is here, and we are your weekly source for performance information. Do get to us, as mentioned, at crushperformance.com. Follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush and on Facebook, The Talent Grid. If you have questions, comments, smart remarks, or if you have a topic you want us to investigate, let us know. We may dedicate a segment or an entire show to your topic. Today, we are talking coaching and coaching development, something we'll be doing the entire year as we talk to the great coaches, we look at the science and research behind coaching, and of course, we look at some of the great programs around the world. And to kick off this Crush Hot Topic, we are joined by Wayne Perro, the senior coaching consultant and advisor for the Coaching Association of Canada. Wayne, thanks for helping us kick off this Crush campaign.
Thanks, Crush. Pleasure to be here.
Well, a very important conversation as we kick off our 2017 coaching program here on Crush Performance. If there's one thing we now understand, it's not that we didn't know it before, but I think it's just becoming a real big emphasis if we look what's happening in sports, is really putting a focus on great coaching. It is certainly a key. We know at the Olympic level in Canada, They're focusing on coaching development. But also, Wayne, if we look at the dropout rates and, you know, some of the surveys that have been done for some of the young kids who are dropping out of organized sports, there's a strong correlation between how they're being coached and why they're dropping out of sports. So it's a very important conversation. Want to thank you again for joining us today.
Yeah, my pleasure. And you're right. There is a correlation to all of this in terms of athlete dropout of sport, but also the quality of coaching.
Yeah,
that they're receiving.
Well, some of the recent I guess, surveys and studies that have been done looking at participation in sport, you know, sort of alludes to the fact that about 70% of kids are dropping out of school around the age of 13. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that, but in one of the biggest studies done back in 2014, the most recent ones, this was a major study done by the National Alliance for Youth Sports out of the University of Washington. Their number one reason that they found out of the tens of thousands of kids they surveyed is it wasn't fun anymore. And we're not pointing fingers at the coaching here, but I guess maybe let's start off the conversation with the importance of sport in our youth sports, not just for, you know, participation, but for overall general health. It's a real, real important part of our communities and our societies right now.
Well, you're absolutely right. And we hear a lot of anecdotal messaging about the value of sport and the ability to create and develop life skills within sport. The challenge that we have is putting it in perspective. And for coaches, you know, a lot of coaches will emulate what they see in the context of high performance or professional sport and think that, you know, ultimately their success is being measured by wins and losses. Where, you know, what we're really trying to do when we talk about building or using sport for development is we're trying to make good people. We're trying to help facilitate the development of people using sport as a tool. And there are so many key messages that can come out in that development. So, for example, you know, winning and losing itself translates in real life to you may apply for a job somewhere and not get it. You may apply for a different job somewhere else and get it. So that could be considered a win or a loss. You know, you can expand or theorize about the correlation between sport and real life, but the challenge that we have, I think the biggest challenge that we have is understanding that coaches shouldn't be measured by wins and losses, nor should the athletes they're working with.
Oh, interesting stuff. We're talking with Wayne Perreault, the senior coaching consultant and advisor for the Coaching Association of Canada. Well, in that study, they also asked the kids to rank their number one reasons why sport is fun. And the number one reason on the list of 81 parameters that the kids put forth, the number one reason was just trying your best, being able to get out there, try your best, win, lose, or draw. Winning came in at 48th overall, so a very, very low priority in winning for the young athletes who are actually participating. So I think that's a strong message for all the coaches out there.
Well, it's absolutely a strong message. And participation, you know, I look at the system in Canada, and in theory, the system facilitates all of that. We've got recreational and house league sports for certainly the mass participation sports like baseball, like hockey, basketball, soccer, et cetera. And you can go and play those sports at a community level, regardless essentially of how old you are, or you can play at various levels of competitiveness within those sports. One of the big opportunities that has come into the fold in the last 15 years is the development of, and I know you're familiar with this, very familiar with this, is the development of the long-term athlete development model.
Right.
And one of the key components of developing, for example, coach education within an LTAD context is creating that active for life participation sector or section of LTAD. And, you know, that really ultimately in the end is where most people that start out in sport end up in sport. And my last comment to support that is, you know, when I refer to the small percentage of people, for example, that start playing hockey with the intent and the dream of playing professional hockey, the small percentage of people that actually fulfill that dream. But then there's a huge population that goes on and plays what we commonly refer to as beer league hockey. So if we could just keep that in perspective when our kids are young and developing in sport, I think we'd go a long way to satisfying that fun component versus the winning component.
Yeah, you're so right, Wayne. You know, I've been lucky enough to travel the world with baseball and hockey and all the various sports. And it's interesting to see in every country that I go to, people are looking at, following, trying to imitate or even work with the Canadian sport program in terms of the long-term athlete development program. And I think one of the great ideas and concepts that revolves around that particular program itself is the idea that it's not designed to, you know, produce high-performance athletes, though high-performance athletes probably at a higher rate is a very, very nice byproduct. The idea of this entire program is to help people enjoy sport and have success at sport at all the incremental levels of development so they can go on to enjoy it for the rest of their lives. And I guess the other side spinoff is that of that is when, you know, a person goes through a system like this, they can help their kids go through the same system with a little bit of knowledge. So the wheels just begun to turn here in Canada, and it's incredible. It's something for all Canadians to be proud of. It's influencing sport around the world.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, your comment a minute ago, the aspiration of playing high-performance sport is just that. It's an aspiration. We look at high-performance sport as being aspirational. But if you talk to the people, the scouts that go out and find those athletes that end up competing at a high-performance level, almost exclusively they will say, or universally I should say, they will say, you know what? If you're that good, we will find you.
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah.
You know, when we get into the, and I'm sure you're going to have this discussion at one point, the cost of sport and the cost not only in dollars, but in time and the social negativity around getting so immersed in sport and playing one sport for 12 months of the year and all of that, you know, it's, if people would realize that it's really offset by those that have the talent will be found by those that are looking for the talent. That's their job. And then secondly, what also is a bit is coming to the surface now in sport in Canada is that we go to often the mass participation sports, as I referred to them earlier, because that's what we see.
Right.
But then there are other sports that afford opportunity for various levels of competition that people don't necessarily migrate to because they're not in the public eye all the time. And we refer to these as our smaller sports, you know, and I don't mean this disrespectfully in any way, but, you know, certain sports don't, their entry level is very much older than others. A good example would be some athletes don't start rowing until they hit university. And because they're not exposed to that as young kids, they're exposed more to the mass participation sports.
Right. Interesting conversation. We're talking with Wayne Perreault, who's a senior coaching consultant and advisor for the Coaching Association of Canada. Well, Wayne, let's back it up a little bit as we're talking coaching and coaching development. It's one of our mandates this year on Crush Performance because we know how important developing coaching is in terms of just overall enjoyment of sport for young participants, but also, again, for proper skill development if an athlete ever will have a chance to go on and represent their country or play professionally or even get a college scholarship. It's a big, big part of the sport. Let's talk a little bit about the Coaching Association of Canada and what they're trying to mandate and do to, you know, help steer the coaches in the right direction from the grassroots all the way up to the professional and Olympic ranks.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I'm proud to work with the Coaching Association of Canada. And specifically, I'm very proud to be somebody that is heavily involved in coach development. And I do so in a couple of sports and also what we refer to as multi-sport. And if you, to understand the model, the coaching model in Canada, you would look at the Coaching Association of Canada as the developer and facilitator of the coaching content and theory. And what we do is we partner with currently 66 national sport organizations, and we help them. My job at the Coaching Association of Canada is to work with 10 of those sports to help them adapt that content and theory to their sport. And we do it at various levels. We have three streams in the National Coaching Certification Program. We have the community stream, we have the competitive stream, and we have the instruction stream. And what we do is we assist our partners, our sport partners, in building in their sport-specific content into those streams for their sport, but we also help them by either delivering separately the multi-sport content, which we used to refer to as theory of coaching, but in some cases, sports will actually integrate that into their sport-specific training. At the national level, we work with those partners to develop the content. All of that content is then migrated down through the net from the national system to the provincial system. And typically it's delivered at the provincial level of the sports system in collaboration with clubs and local associations and so forth. So that's really kind of an overview of the system, but it does, as you point out, Crush, it does address grassroots community sport all the way up to high performance Olympic sport.
So important. We're talking with Wayne Perreault, the senior coaching consultant and advisor for the Coaching Association of Canada. You know, Wayne, the coach plays such an important role. I think if we surveyed all of our audience today and everybody who listens and is exposed to the show, everybody clearly remembers a coach that has impacted their lives, just like right along with a great teacher. There's nothing more powerful than a great coach. I still keep in touch with some of the coaches I had as a little kid, for crying out loud. And, you know, God bless them for just coming out and giving us the opportunity to play. And truly, that's what it's all about. Canada is certainly a world leader, and that's why we wanted to start here. This year, we're going to be going around the globe talking to different coaching perspectives and talking to some of the top coaches and programs out there. But Canada is really on the forefront in terms of its developmental model. And as you mentioned, it goes back to this LTAD and right alongside this coaching development program that prepares young coaches and high-end coaches for the level they're addressing, the level of athlete they're addressing. And I think that's a real smart way to go about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think I don't have the specific numbers, and I'm sure they've varied over the years, but I'll just couch it this way. The vast majority of coaches in Canada are volunteers.
Right.
And many of those get involved in sport because they understand the value of putting their children in organized sport. And so they do so, and somebody from the organization with which they've signed up, their child says, hey, we need a coach. Are you interested? The Coaching Association of Canada, through its partners, provides resources and training for those coaches so that they're not just showing up at the training field or the field of play with an equipment bag and trying to figure it out as they go along. So, you know, there's a fine balance too, as well, what we ask our volunteers to do in terms of training and so forth. But I think the significant message, the most important message that what I'd like to push out through this this medium is that in partnership with our sports, those are resources that help coaches do a good job at the field of play, training, et cetera. So, you know, we try to find that balance of how much time do you spend in a classroom versus how much time do you spend working with kids? And, you know, that's one of the great things I love about the NCCP program is that we, you know, we provide those resources and they're readily available.
Yeah, great stuff, Wayne. Well, you know, one of the interesting surveys that was done right along with that work at Washington University trying to figure out why kids are dropping out of sport, trying to understand. And there's a lot of reasons why. Interest levels, there's so many things drawing the kids' interest with the online world now today. It's also part of the perspective when we look at the reasons. But they also did an interesting survey of what kids wanted from a coach. And I thought this was really interesting because this is straight from the horse's mouth. And they came up with the top five answers of the thousands upon thousands of kids. And here's what kids want from a coach, Wayne. And I don't know if you've seen this before, but again, this is from the most recent big study that's done on coaching, which was from 2014. The number five reason or the number five thing that young athletes want from their coach is someone who listens, which I thought was very interesting and intuitive for young athletes. Number four was knowledge of sport. Number five was clear, consistent communication. Number two was positive role model. And the number one thing that kids wanted from their coaches was respect and encouragement. Isn't that an interesting list?
Well, it's totally interesting. And you know, I'll take it one step further. If you've worked with high performance athletes, the list doesn't get too far different.
Interesting,
context in different times.
Yep.
The priorities may shift a little bit, but let's be honest. One of the greatest quotes I ever heard from a coach, John Wooden, his comment was, "I don't coach basketball, I coach people." And when you put it in that perspective, I mean, think about it. What we're doing is we are taking a person or a group of people in a sporting environment and giving them the benefit of the knowledge and experience that we've had, the training that we've had to help them realize some goal within sport. And that goal may be as simple as having fun. And there's nothing wrong with that. You will come across athletes, many coaches will come across athletes that want to get more out of sport. And you use the word respect. Well, we have to respect what it is those athletes want to get from their sporting experience. So once we understand that, puts things in context for us as coaches, you know, it creates a wonderful sporting environment for everyone.
Yeah, we're talking with Wayne Perreault, the senior coaching consultant and advisor for the Coaching Association of Canada. Wayne, a couple of minutes left. Boy, we could talk for hours here, but I just want to get to a couple of things, okay? One of the interesting points of our conversation today, I think, is the power of Canada's long-term athlete development program. That's really helped us understand the progressive development of the athlete, which in hand helps us understand what a coach at every single age group should be focusing on. One of the big things that has come out of the LTAD research is the training versus competition ratios. And I think this is a real, real important point for every single coach at every level. And I'm talking right up to the professional, highest professional guys that I'm working with. This is something that is really undervalued and maybe misunderstood. But when we look at the ratios, it goes everywhere from 0 to 6 years of age, 6 to 9, 9 to 12 years, 12 to 16, right up to 16 to 23, 19 and plus. There are specific ratios of training versus competition based on the needs of the athlete. And I think that chart and understanding of that is a real important thing for any coach at any level.
Well, you're absolutely right. Now, I have two comments about that. And I'll use an example from one of the sports with which I'm directly involved, and that's baseball. In our coach development program with Baseball Canada, in the evaluation component for certification, we ask our coaches, as do all sports, to create a portfolio. We do that portfolio online, and what we do based on them building a seasonal plan, we give them immediate feedback in terms of their practice to game ratio and where they fit in the context of LTAD within that sport. Now, that's comment number one. So we are training coaches to understand that, but we're also giving them the feedback through the information they populate in their yearly training plan.
Here's the hook.
The hook is that those coaches go and coach within an organization. That organization is usually run by volunteers, maybe some paid staff, but there are a lot of volunteers involved. They build schedules against park time, field time, arena time, et cetera, and then they hand it over and they say, well, this is what you get. So you may be, use hockey as an example, because it's ice time is very expensive.
Yeah.
You may be told at the beginning of the year, your recreational team is going to play, your recreational 8-year-old hockey team is going to play 20 games this year, but we only have enough ice time to give you 10 practices.
Right.
So this is one of the big challenges in the system. And then what do you do at that point? Do you say, okay, well, let's take 10 of those ice times and turn them into practices. So now we have 20 practices and 10 games. If you ask some of the younger kids, they want to play the game.
Right.
You know, that's what's important to them. Their parents want them to play and have fun. So the challenge that we have, and I think this is one of the great things that's coming out in the NCCP and all sports right now, is how do we make practices fun that are reflective of the stage of LTAD that the athletes are at and that the coaches are working within that context, and so that practice actually becomes worthwhile or simply fun, and it's in context for the athletes at that stage.
Wow, Wayne Perreault, what a fantastic conversation. This could go on for hours, my good friend, but this is a fantastic start to our 2016 campaign to support and educate and think about developing coaches and supporting coaches around the world. So, listen, I want to appreciate you for your time today. And if people want to get more information on your program, the Coaching Association of Canada, how can they do that, Wayne?
Simply go to coach.ca or go to your provincial or national sporting organization website, and you will get the more specific detail about that sport. But coach.ca will link you to all of those organizations.
Great, Wayne. Listen, really appreciate your time. We're going to look forward to following up with you as we tackle this all season long.
Excellent. Thanks, Crush. Appreciate it.
And there you go. What a great way to kick off our look into coaching and coaching development here on Crush Performance. When we come back, I want to go back to the Crush Archives and dig out a conversation we had with Dan Pink. I thought this would be a great time to do it as we kick off our 2017 look at coaching and coaching development. One of the key aspects of being a great coach is motivating your people to do what needs to be done. And Dan Pink, in his book Drive, and of course in his TED Talk, talks about motivation and how we're missing the mark. So we're going to get to that after Crush Performance. Stick around.
Radio Influence brings you the best in digital media broadcasting. When it comes to sports, we've got experts like national sports radio host Rich Herrera, the fabulous Sports Babe, and former Major League Baseball manager Kevin Kennedy. Want a good laugh? Then go on the beach with Pants and Roller Girl, or just LOL with Nancy Alexander. And when it comes to real life, Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger and Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill will make you think. When it comes to what you want, Radio Influence has you covered. Find our programming on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at CrushPerformance.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. I am Jeff Crochelle. We are your weekly source for performance information. And today we kick off our look into coaching and coaching development as we will be scouring the world for science, research, great programs. And we'll also be talking to some of the great athletes and some of the great coaches about their experiences as we look at the all-important role of being a coach. We just finished a great conversation with Wayne Perreault, the senior coaching consultant and advisor for the Coaching Association of Canada. Canada has a very, very special program, and no matter where I go around the world, somebody mentions the Canadian Long-Term Athlete Development Program, and certainly they're a world leader when it comes to coaching development. I wanted to go back into our archives because one of the great things a coach has to be able to do is motivate the people around them. Whether they're down, whether they're up, or whether they're right in the middle, motivation's a key part. Yet, whether we're talking business or sport, whether we're talking the classroom, or even in your family, our perception of motivation and how to motivate people might be a little off. Here's our conversation with Dan Pink. We're now joined by Dan Pink, author, speaker, and host and co-executive producer of Crowd Control and the new TV series about human behavior in the National Geographic Channel. Dan, thanks for coming on the show today.
My pleasure, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
We've been very interested in your works. Your very recent book, To Sell Is Human, is fascinating. But I read Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us. And of course, in the sporting world, we're always looking at ways to motivate people. And it's really interesting. But you know, if we go back to A Whole New Mind, if we could start the conversation there, why right-brainers will rule the future. I thought this was a real interesting concept when you first came up with it. Let's start there and figure out maybe from there how this applies to everything that's going on in the world today.
Well, that book makes an argument that in the workplace, the central abilities, the abilities that are most important are shifting. It used to be that the most important abilities were these kinds of spreadsheet abilities, very logical, linear, sequential kinds of abilities. But today, those abilities can be outsourced and those abilities can be automated. And so what we have to do now is the sorts of things that computers can't do faster and smart people overseas can't do cheaper. And that ends up being things like artistry, empathy, inventiveness, design, big picture thinking, that those kinds of things, which we can think of kind of sort of metaphorically as right brain abilities, end up being more valuable.
Very interesting. I think that's a human thing, all in all. This could apply to virtually everything we do in life, don't you think, Dan?
Certainly a lot of the things we do in life. If you think about, we've seen this, it's a very common pattern in history. So if you look at, say, the Industrial Revolution. The Industrial Revolution basically automated muscle power. Okay, so a forklift can carry stuff a lot better, a lot heavier stuff, a lot better, a lot longer than you and I could on our own. Despite your incredible background in strength conditioning, a forklift is still going to outperform you, right?
Right.
What's happening now is that certain kinds of software are automating certain cognitive processes, but they end up being the very kind of simple, but very algorithmic, recipe, list-based kinds of things, whether it's basic accounting, even certain kinds of legal practice, even certain kinds of financial analysis. So just as we had to do things that we're not going to be able to beat a forklift at strength, we're not going to be able to beat a piece of software, an algorithm, at that kind of logical, sequential reasoning. So what we have to do are things that that software can't do, which at least right now ends up being more of these big picture, artistic, empathic things.
All right, interesting. We're talking with Dan Pink, author, speaker, and host of Crowd Control on the National Geographic Channel. You can check out all of Dan's information at danpink.com. Dan, I think it comes back to that idea you mentioned in Drive about this fixed-mindedness or fixedness, where people just can't seem to get out of what they've been doing to break into sort of this new approach and maybe even more efficient approach to what's going on right now or leading into the future. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I mean, here's the thing, you know, that's not necessarily means that people are dumb or lazy. What it means is that, you know, if I do something one way on a Wednesday, chances are I'm going to do it the exact same way on a Thursday. And so it's very hard sometimes to break those kinds of patterns. And when it comes to motivation, again, especially when we're motivating people on the job or in schools, or you know, as you have been talking about for a long time, you know, how do you motivate people on the baseball diamond or the basketball court or the hockey rink? We tend to think that the way to do it are these very controlling kinds of measures. Whether we punish the behavior we don't want, we reward the behavior we do want, and what 50 years of behavioral science tells us is that. Yeah, that's good for certain things, but it's actually not as great as we think it is. And what we're better off doing is focusing on a sense of autonomy, which is, you know, are you self-directed in how you're doing all this stuff? Focus on a sense of mastery. Are you constantly getting better at something that matters? And also on purpose. Do you know why you're doing it in the first place? And I guess the best line that somebody gave to me, and I think it applies with equal force to both business managers and baseball managers, you know, to coaches on the field, as well as, you know, bosses in the office, is that, you know, somebody said to me, thinking about hiring, like, if that person needs me to motivate them, then I don't want to hire them. And, you know, motivation isn't something that one person does to another. At its heart, it's something that we each do for ourselves.
We're talking with Dan Pink, author and co-host of Crowd Control and National Geographic Channel. Dan, that's very interesting, you know, because one thing that we're always trying to tap into is helping people understand how they can get to the next level. And you're right. You're so right. If we have to motivate them, it's almost an impossible task. Would you classify maybe motivation as one of those intangibles, one of those natural gifts that people can have? Or do you think it's a learned trait if we have them in the right environment, have your people in the right environment?
You mean in terms of being motivated or motivating others?
Well, maybe being motivated. Or do you think motivating others can lead to motivation? Does one lead to another, I guess, would be maybe the conversation to have.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, it's a really good, and it's a really important question, actually, because a lot of the decisions we make as teachers, as coaches, as parents, as bosses, ultimately come down to that question that you're asking. Which is, you know, what is human nature? Is human nature to be lazy and, you know, not really wanting to work, not really being interested in stuff, and therefore having to be controlled? Or is human nature to be active and engaged and actually seeking some self-direction? And my view of human nature is it's the second one. That is, human beings, by their nature, want to be autonomous and self-directed. And I say that not because, you know, I have some kind of fantasy about the nobility of human beings. It's because if you look at kids, that's how kids are. You know, that's how we are out of the box. You know, you're not going to find a two-year-old. I defy you to find a two-year-old who's not self-directed, curious, and engaged, or a four-year-old who's not self-directed, curious, and engaged. That's our nature. And I think that people, you know, learn some of the habits of compliance. They learn maybe to become dependent on control, but I think our nature is to be autonomous and self-directed. That doesn't mean we're going to turn out that way. And so, you know, it's really a mix of both. But if you start as a teacher, a coach, a boss, a parent, whatever, with the premise that, yeah, you know what, most people actually do care. They want to do something worthwhile. They want to control their own lives. That's going to lead you down a path. It might take a little bit longer, but that ultimately is going to yield far better results.
Huh, very interesting, Dan. Do you think that the way we have sort of our businesses set up, let's walk into any business or the majority of businesses across North America or in my world, almost every single sporting team, from the little duffers right up to the professional guys. We might have it wrong here. There seems to be a massive disconnect to what we know about, you know, science and motivation and what we actually do here. And I guess that's one of the big messages in the book, Drive.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is that because, you know, I've gotten a lot of feedback from coaches at both the collegiate here in the U.S. and even at the professional level, who have read the book and who, you know, and who have tried to take some of its principles and put them in place. And, you know, whether it's, you know, a couple of NBA coaches, at least one that I know of, NFL program, not much in baseball, actually. But actually, it's interesting now that I think about it. It's really, you know, a lot of basketball, a lot of basketball in the NBA and in here in the States at the collegiate level.
Yeah, it is interesting. And you know, if we think about, you know, in pro sports, a lot of, you know, everybody sees the glamour of television. What people don't understand is the grind of the travel, the practice, the groundhog day. Oh. That there's not days of the week anymore. Hey, it's a practice day and it's a game day. That's kind of how it works. And so motivation becomes a really, really important factor, even at the highest levels of sport.
Absolutely. And, you know, and so why do they do, you know, so why do they do it? If you look at the really great athletes, and I don't know, we can stick with basketball for a second.
Sure.
Whether it is, you know, LeBron or Steph Curry or in his earlier days, Kobe Bryant. I think what fans don't see is just how much work these guys do.
Exactly.
To get good. If you only watch, you know, if you only watch those 44 minutes now or 48 minutes now of an NBA game, that's just a fraction of what these guys are doing. And, you know, you hear about like the really, really great players who are, you know, again, in basketball, who, you know, are staying after practice and saying, I'm going to hit 53 pointers before I go in and shower, or I'm going to take 50 additional free throws before I go in and shower, even though practice is officially over. And that's the sort of thing that's all about mastery, about, you know, how do you get a little bit better at something that really matters to you?
Hey, Dan, do you think that that has a lot to do with the environment that the coaches or the boss or the middle manager of a business downtown really provides for the workers? Because just think about these people who are working at a desk every day, answering phones or dealing with customers. That's a hard environment to actually practice in and to imagine, how do I get better at this job without any legitimate practice time? It's not like sport at all.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. And so, you know, and this is why, I mean, one of the things that's interesting about sports, in contrast to other kinds of things, and your example is a great one, is, you know, with sports, there is always feedback. You're playing for the Blue Jays, you're R.A. Dickey, and you pitch, and the ball just, you know, you either throw a ball or a strike, all right? You're Jose Bautista, and, you know, you have an at-bat. You either get on or you get out. And so, and one of the things that is very clear in the research on mastery is that mastery depends on feedback. The only way to get better at something is to get information on how you're doing. And I think one of the draws of sports, one reason that we play sports, even as amateurs, why would I go out and play pickup basketball? Why would I go out and play softball? It's not like I'm going to, you know, I mean, it's embarrassing in a way, you know, how bad I am. But why do I do it? Well, I do it because maybe today I can get a little bit better at this. And, you know, on a basketball court or on a baseball diamond, you get feedback all the time. And unfortunately, those people in offices, you know, often, you know, the way that they get feedback is with an annual performance review. So, you know, once a year, they get feedback on how they're doing. Imagine, LeBron James getting feedback once a year, or, you know, that guy Kane for the Chicago Blackhawks,
sure,
getting feedback once a year.
Yep.
I mean, it's crazy. You'd say, what? That's not how it works.
It's interesting, you know, and this is sort of some maybe insights into these successful performance environments we see. We're talking with Dan Pink, author, speaker, and host of Crowd Control, a new series about human behavior on the National Geographic Channel. You can check Dan out at danpink.com. Dan, let's talk about this, you know, the performance environment. You know, maybe we get complacent, maybe we get caught up into the drudgery of the day, doing the same thing every single day. It's the same for everybody. It's sort of a human thing. What are some of the strategies you talk about in terms of, you know, keeping it fresh for people? You know, you talk about the three key elements: autonomy, mastery, and purpose. I think if somebody really went and deliberately worked those three elements into their environment, you would have so much more productivity and probably compliance that you'd be amazed.
Yeah, and there are, it's a good question. There are some interesting things that, say, you know, a manager or a teacher or even a coach can do. I mean, one of my favorites, let's talk about purpose, because purpose seems a little bit abstract to people.
Yeah.
But one of the things that comes out in this, in the research in behavioral science, is that, you know, explaining to people why they're doing something increases their performance. So if you have things like Adam Grant at the University of Pennsylvania has done some great research showing that if people who are, say, raising funds for a university scholarship fund, actually meet people who have received scholarships, or even read letters from people who have received scholarships, they raise more money because they know why they're doing it. You know, they know why they're doing it in the first place. There's some great research out of Harvard showing that when cooks can actually see their customers in a cafeteria, that the quality of their food increases because, that's why I'm here. I'm here to satisfy that person. I'm here to, like, make that person's life better. So circling back to the question itself, if you're a manager or a coach, teacher, whatever, one of the simplest things you can do is just, you know, think about in a given week, have two fewer conversations about how to do something and two more conversations about why to do it. So, you know, because bosses and teachers and coaches love to say, here's how you do a quadratic equation. Here's how you make a sales call. Here's how you hit a fastball, you know, here's how you hit a cutter.
Sure.
And that's important. Okay. That's important. But it's sort of, you got to take a step back and say, okay, why are we doing it in the first place? Why does it matter that you learn a quadratic equation? Why does it matter that the sales call is successful? Why does it matter to you as an athlete that you're able to hit a cutter? And if you have two fewer conversations about how and two more about why, I think you'll see an uptick in performance. And as bosses, again, as bosses and teachers and coaches, we're just obsessed with the how, and we very rarely take a step back and say, okay, why are we doing this in the first place? What's the point of the exercise?
Dan Pink, very interesting stuff. If people want to get more information on you, it can go to danpink.com, author, speaker, and of course, host of the new TV series, Crowd Control. I wanted to ask you, how's that going for you? It's very, very interesting and sounds like it's a smashing hit, you know, talking about human behavior. I love it.
Yeah, it's a fun show. What we do is we take problems and then, you know, things like jaywalking or people parking in disabled parking bays, and then try to solve the problem and put a solution in place, turn on our cameras and see what happens. So trying to change behavior for the better, one person at a time.
Dan Pink, excellent work. Hey, we really appreciate your time today, and we'll look forward to talking to you in the future.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeff, for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, there you go, everybody. Fantastic conversation with Dan Pink. I'm so glad we dug that one out because it is insightful and smart, and also a great way to round out our kickoff to our look into coaching and coaching development. We have to thank Wayne Perro for joining us today. Of course, Dan Pink for contributing as well. And I want to thank you guys for tuning in. Hey, if you like the show, please pass it on to your friends, family, your teammates, and also your fellow coaches, teachers, mentors, and bosses. We're here to just spread the good word when it comes to human performance. And there'll be much more next week on Crush Performance. We'll talk to you then.
Chef Brian Duffy here. I've got a new show called Duffified Live that's unlike anything you've ever heard. Each week, I'm going to be talking to some of my friends, some people I've never even met before. We're going to be talking about people that I meet on the road through some of my experiences. We're talking about restaurants, talking about great stories, great guests, wild adventures, the whole nine yards. Get Duffified Live with me, Chef Brian Duffy, each week on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.